Hi, this is Foster Brown, your host for the Internet Advisor, and welcome to our podcast of this past Saturday's program from August 21st. Please enjoy this first hour of our program. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. It is a delight to be here with you on WJR, something that Gary Baker and I began as, a guest appearance on the weekend show that I was doing back in 1998, right, Gary?
Yeah, actually, it was in 97 that we did the guest appearance, and we started the show the very first part of 98. So we're about 12 and a half years into our run here.
And then very quickly, when we were doing the show as its own entity, Tommy Dyroff joined us, and Tom is back here this afternoon. Tom, delighted to see you with us here.
It is great to see you. Welcome.
Well, guys, again. I'm really inspired by that Randy Quaid line in the last part of Independence Day. Hello, boys, I'm back.
That's Welcome Back, Kotter, too, right? Well, John Travolta, yeah, I'm back.
It's good to have you here, Tom.
Yeah, it is great to have you back here with us. We've spent many, and part of that time, it was during the morning, so many Saturday mornings, and then in the afternoon, sometimes in the evening, and sometimes
we've been anywhere. I think of the, Johnny Cash version of that song, I've Been Everywhere, in terms of the schedule. And by the way, folks, after next week, you may have heard Dean Krauskopf talking about it, but with the MSU football schedule starting, we will begin that pilgrimage where we will move around on the schedule based on when the U of M football game's on. Occasionally preempted, and occasionally
they're all bigger than MSU. Us. You know, if they want our time slot, they can have it. And they have pads.
The big guys in green, they can do anything they want as far as it goes. We can just get out of the way. Hey, let's talk a little bit.
But we will keep everybody up to date on our website at internetadvisor.net.
Right.
Sometimes we'll be totally preempted. Other times we'll just move around in the schedule.
And so a great way of following us is if you go to internetadvisor.net right now, you'll notice that on the right-hand side, we have where you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. And if you click on either one of those, we'll be using that a lot more for keeping people aware of when we'll be on the air and who's going to be on the air with us. And by the way, for Facebook, I'm using it more and more for stories that you guys send me during the week because it's a great way to get it out to people. And so please, when you visit us at internetadvisor.net, just click over there. And all you need to do is when you get to Facebook, if you're already on Facebook, just click the like button that's at the top of the page there. And boom, you'll become a fan of the page and be informed then when we do have information we posted. Like a big story this week. And I don't know for the two of you if it seemed as big, but for me, I was stunned, I think, with most of the rest of the world that follow tech when we saw the announcement about Intel buying McAfee, of all things.
Right.
It's not so much they bought them, but it's the price they're putting in.
Oh, the price.
That's a
bonus.
$8 billion. Billion with a B.
Tom, you're right. On top of that, I saw it was like they gave them a 60% bonus over what their stock was worth?
Yeah.
A premium?
So, you know, Tom, it's so apropos to have you here because you're our hardware guru. You've been dealing with Intel for years, long before most of the rest of us even knew what a computer was, and so you've known these guys for a while. This is a very big departure for Intel.
I remember Intel when they had stone tablets. I love Intel. I love Intel chips. I love Intel chipsets. I love Intel motherboards. I think that combination is a wonderful platform for people to build a PC around, and business PCs or consumer PCs, doesn't matter, server PCs. But you know, Intel has had an extremely lousy reputation for buying companies and just they don't have a clue what to do with them afterwards. I mean, there's a whole, you go back about 10 or 15 years and you look at all their acquisitions and they're just, none of them really have turned out at all. And Intel's into other markets like wireless and whatever, then they're out of the business. So, you know, I can see them putting in a couple million dollars to buy a certain company, but to put $8 billion
and 7.68.
Yeah, 7.68 billion dollars. I'm wondering, Tom, and again, I'm glad you're here because you're familiar with hardware. I mean, does this say something about security now shifting from the software side to being actually baked into the chips?
Well, it already has moved in that direction, right?
Absolutely. The security that you see in Windows 7 that they're touting that makes Windows 7 as secure as Linux, you know, overcoming that old argument, some of the data execution protection things, that's all kind of becoming baked into the hardware. So if you can take it one step further and bake malware protection somewhere down deeper into the hardware level where it's less likely to be compromised by the malware that you might load in, you know, maybe if that's where they're headed, that makes sense. But it would seem to me you could just have kind of a handshake partnership to develop that rather than...
Yeah, because McAfee or any of the big security providers would love to have that kind of relationship.
And didn't I understand from the news reports I'm reading that McAfee will stay McAfee? It won't be absorbed into Intel.
Right.
I think it's going to be staying independent.
Yeah, well, because they do so many other things as well. Right. But being able to provide that somehow that technology, that software, firmware, we'll go into the firmware now.
Right. I'm still amazed that they picked up McAfee's dance card, since we have seen, for instance, Comcast recently drop McAfee because of a lot of problems that the consumers were having with it.
And then moved
to Symantec. I think it went back to Symantec, didn't they?
And they had problems with it, but they may have also had contract problems with McAfee. McAfee has still done fairly well at the enterprise level.
Oh, have they? Okay.
And they say that's where the real competition is. At the consumer level, it doesn't matter because everyone gets the free antivirus.
Free anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
But at the enterprise level, where people actually pay for stuff, that's where the major competition is. And this actually may help McAfee because of the black eyes they've had over the last couple of years with these, you know, huge faux pas that have caused massive PC outages. It may give them a fresh breath, saying, "Hey, we're purchased by Intel now. We're run by Intel. We have, you know, look at us again." Or it may help the competitors, saying that McAfee is vulnerable now. You know, the real mystery here is, why don't they ever ask us before they buy these things? Yeah. I don't get that.
Right here on this show, they can call in and tell us what's going on. Boy, would that be easier for us instead of making us guess.
And we might all end up with saying, what were you thinking?
There's a lot of analysts that are doing that right now. I'm sure they're getting that question a lot.
We were chatting about this before the show, and one of the things that we were all saying was, the amazing thing is that the variety of commentary is, what in the world are they doing? And Tom, again, Intel has not had a good history in this. And
it's terrible.
Bubble back about 1999, they, along with other people, were gobbling up all sorts of things for billions of dollars and then selling them off cheap about 2002 or 2003.
You're supposed to buy low, sell high, not the other way around, right? I always heard that. I mean, Tom, you and I have MBAs. We heard that, right?
It's in one of our classes. I hope I was awake for that. But, you know, they as a reseller, as an integrator, as a purchaser of equipment, and when I see Intel opening up with a new product line, knowing their history, I've got to look at that and say, you know, show me several years of history before I'll even invest in that kind of stuff. Because I cannot put my business online. I can't put my customers on the line for equipment that's going to be orphaned a couple years down the road. And that's Intel's history.
Yeah. Well, in an article in Forbes, our own Richard Steenan, who is right here in Michigan, been on the show many times, was one of my main competitors way back when we started Online Technologies back at the beginning of
the
web, not at the beginning of the internet, but at the beginning of the web. He ran Rustnet.
Yes.
But he's been a security expert with Gartner and a number of other things. He had quite pointed comments in Forbes magazine this last week about this deal. And
let's do this. We got to take a pause. Let's pause for a second. When we come back, I'd be interested in hearing what some of his comments were. And then what I want to do is to shift into a practical discussion between the two of you guys, my old hands here, about passwords, because this is something that is driving a lot of people crazy. Mm-hmm. So many more being required than when we first started out, it might have been one or two passwords you needed. Now it's just every time you go onto a website, username and password, please, and you got to create something new. So we're gonna talk a little bit more about the commentary on the Intel purchase of McAfee coming back in just a moment. But also we're going to go into giving you some basic instructions on putting together a strong password, and then get some insights on some of the new theories about passwords as well in just a minute. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Tom Dyroff. And with you this evening here on the Internet Advisor, and if you got rained out by the elements and you're not able to be out there on Woodward Avenue. Oh, who's my...
Foster, it's your birthday this week.
Goodness. Oh, Lord, look at this.
Oh, happy birthday, Foster.
Thank you so much.
Tom just brought in, for the folks at home that can't see what's going on in the studio, Tom just brought in a hat. Oh, SpongeBob and Gary, happy birthday. Napkins and a big frosted cupcakes cake, big cupcake in the middle and with Oreo cookies.
All right, everybody, diets are off this weekend.
Well,
diets are off.
You know, and actually, we
thank you
we
so
will,
much.
We will have to share some of that cake. Scott is here, Scott Anderson, our engineer.
No, that's right.
And Eric Anderson, our
producer,
associate producer, is off this week, and Cindy Cooper's in. But Cindy said that she wouldn't mind having a little bit of cake.
There you go.
But Eric and Scott are on the Biggest Loser kick.
Oh, no,
and
that's
Scott,
right. There's an iPad at stake.
We are tempting Scott.
Oh, Scott, I am sorry. I didn't do
we
it, Scott.
Tempting
I didn't
him.
Do it. I would have brought a virtual cake in, but they brought in a real one. So thank you so much, guys.
So,
it was this last
well,
Wednesday, and thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And many, many more.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Tommy, thank you so much.
Tom, when I picked Tom up to come in here, and he brought that out, I went, oh, this is going to be fun.
Oh, my. Well,
so thank you, Tom.
My doctor has instructed me that I had to pick up a little weight in the day after treatment, so this certainly will help.
Yeah,
I
certainly will.
A little bit of it.
Are you kidding with all that whipped cream?
We'll share that all around. Okay. Let's get back to our comments. Just a quick one to wrap up a comment you made about Rich Steenan, who had been on in the air with us and is now a commentator on Forbes, about the Intel purchase of McAfee. And then, Tom, what I'd like to do is to get to some ideas about building a secure password, just some of the basics for our listeners. And we posted something, and you've got another article you brought in with us today we're also going to link up to. But Gary,
well,
just
Richard, you know, and again, I knew him back in 95. We competed well with each other. Wonderful guy. He is an expert in security, was with Gartner, which is an analyst group. It now has his own firm, but was quoted in Forbes this week and saying exactly what everybody else is saying, which is that some deals just don't make sense. And he went through some of the ways it doesn't make sense. But, you know, we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some very smart people at Intel, and there may be a good reason that we just can't fathom.
Somebody hedging their bets on McAfee made some money because their shares doubled, I think, in value. Mm-hmm. While Intel took a bit of a hit at the same time.
Yeah, most people can't seem to understand it. And Intel's not been real forthcoming in telling them exactly all the plans, which they shouldn't, right? If they've got some plans
Right. They got something under their
So let's wait and see.
All right, let's get to passwords, because that's something that everybody can relate to that's listening, Tom. And as I said, when we started out almost 13 years ago, a password, you might have one username and a password to get into your computer, you know, and then you would get on the internet, and you may have had an AOL password, so there may have been two of them to get onto your browser at that point or your AOL account, but really there wasn't much request for that. Now, almost every site that you hit when you're browsing on the internet is requiring a username and password. Okay, what are some basics that you use? How do you go about handling the whole dilemma of this just multitude of passwords that are being required?
Well, I think the first thing you have to ask is, are passwords necessary? And if they are necessary, how complex should they be? Is it really necessary to follow the advice of the experts? To the first part, yes, they are necessary. I'm not a big password fan. I don't like using them. I don't like wasting the time. But yes, they are necessary for virtually everything we're doing out there. Mm-hmm. Should we have complex passwords? Yes, we should have complex passwords because if your ID is compromised, even on Facebook, if your ID is compromised, there's grief that is given to you or that you can incur. So that we need to be protected and take care of this.
You just mentioned Facebook and that social network site, which has 500 million people on it now. That has become a very important place to have a secure password. How many of us who are on Facebook have had friends spam us and didn't know it?
Right,
you get
exactly.
And somebody's saying, please, that wasn't me that was asking you for your information, et cetera, or whatever.
Well, if somebody does, you know, get your password, can hack into and start to use your computer, not only is it embarrassing, right, because they'll send out things to your friends, they'll have access then to your address book, and they'll send out some pretty damaging things. I mean, things that you wouldn't want sent out under your email address
around
pornography, around so many other
things,
right?
Under the guise of being you.
And people think it's you.
Yes.
So it's, I mean, if that alone doesn't make you set up and take notice and create better, stronger passwords, I don't know what would. But beyond that, if you, a lot of spam is coming out of your computer, ISPs will just shut you off. So then
your provider may shut you down.
Boom, if you do want to send something to a friend of yours on, you know, pick the other system, AOL or
whatever,
right? Mm-hmm. Comcast or whoever, you won't get through to them because people say, no, anything coming from that path, from that computer, from that IP address, we're just not going to allow onto our
network. So there's a high cost to not having good passwords.
And then you got to go clean it all.
Yeah, and you can't you can't stick your head in the sand. So, Tom, what do you do personally? Just how do you handle it?
Well, we do have to use complex passwords, and there was an article in CNN that we were talking about before the show started that said that the old password length needed to be about 8 characters long. They're saying now it needs to be 12 characters long, and preferably even longer than that if you can do it. But the question is, how do you make those complex passwords that long that you can remember? And what there's a couple different strategies that people use. One are you take phrases like...
Mary had a little lamb.
Mary had a little lamb. You take the first character of Mary had a little, of all the words of Mary had a little lamb, and that forms the foundation of your password. And you make some of them capital, like Mary, capital M, had, little H, A, big A, whatever, whatever.
S's become dollar signs, right? So you can do things like that.
And some words that have the word like eight in them, like mate, or bait, or Kate, or Sake, can have the first letter and then the letter
or
M8. Yes, the numeral 8 in there to help solve that problem. Ones can be exclamation points. I's can become ones. Those sort of things. Once you get the hang of it, it's really not that difficult to use. And then the other part that I do is I'll have a complex password, a gobbledygook set of letters, and then I'll append to the end of each that password something about the website. For example, if I have my complex password and I go to Sprint's website, I'll add onto that complex password Sprint or
only on top of that complex
on top of that complex password, so that I'm changing my passwords from every website that I go to, but it's something that I can kind of easily remember.
Because one of the problems is that if somebody does get a hold of your password and you use the same password for everything, they now have your password for everything.
Yes. Right? And, you know, the other thing that I am not good at and that I should be better at is not just the password but the ID. Mm-hmm. Is that the ID that you have to log in should be different than the ID that you display when you are showing up on Facebook or showing up on the websites. Mm-hmm. For example, the bad thing that I did is I used TDIROFF as my login ID.
Understandable.
It's understandable, but it's not the anybody who sees me online at certain forums will see TDIROFF as a contributor. Well, they can just pick up that ID. They've got half the problem already solved.
One half, right?
Yes, one half. Yeah. Right. So it's not just the password you have to worry about, but it's the ID. That ID should be secret, too. You should never display that as, or have that be seen.
When you say ID, you mean the username?
Yes,
what's usually called the username?
Yes, okay. That should be
so
secret.
So now, there are software tools today that manage passwords. One of them, if you are a Comcast user, you have the right to use the whole Norton suite free of charge. Right, just go to Comcast.net, security, download Norton, and you know it's great. Well, they have something right in their software called Identity Safe that will pick up and use all. You know, they'll pick up and they'll track all of your username and passwords for a particular site, and then if you want, they'll automatically put them in for you.
Oh, see, so Comcast has its own little vault on the cloud that has your name on it that it locks everything into.
That's right. Now, there are lots of other software, there's lots of other password software packages out there that do the same thing. Many of them are free, right? So some are in the cloud, some are on your computer. In the case that Norton uses, it's not in the cloud, it's on your computer, but it's a little piece of their software that sits on your computer because they've downloaded the rest of the Norton suite onto your computer as well. But is that safe, Tom? I mean, what if somebody, you have
one master
password to get into that. What if that gets compromised?
Now, we're going to answer that question in just a minute. We're going to take a pause and come back. And when we do come back, we're going to do part two of this. And then, by the way, we're going to be opening up our phone lines for your questions. And let me give you the phone number for that. 1-800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0957. And you can start calling that right now. When we come back after this ad break for some commercials, we're going to talk a little bit more about those password things and also take some questions.
And other people that are listening to the commercials,
oh, yes,
we definitely want them to listen to commercials. People here, mm-hmm, on the other hand, we're going to eat some of your cake.
We'll be back in just a minute, and we won't talk with our mouth full. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Tom Dyroff. And guys, again, thank you so much for the cake. We're going to be posting a picture of that cake shortly.
And Foster.
And
me too. It's so big, it's taking a long time loading onto my computer, but to load
the
it
The cake
up,
isn't yeah, that big.
The cake was huge.
Cake was big, too.
Oh, wow. But let's get back quickly to talk about passwords again. We've been talking about one of the ways of doing it, which is to get a phrase and to take the first, like Mary Had a Little Lamb, and then take the first letter of each word in that phrase.
And you want capital letters. You want special characters,
right.
You want
and
all
put
sorts
an exclamation
of
point at the end or something, right, or whatever else
or
you want.
Or in the middle, it. Even better.
Exactly.
Because what you don't want is you don't want people to be able to use brute force to break it, or some sort of...
Well, tell me what brute force means.
Well, I mean, they'll just take a password cracking program, and they'll run through, you know, millions of permutations, and they'll start with words and phrases in English, but almost in any language today. They'll just keep running until they want it, until they can break it.
The scary thing is that there are computers out there with lots of CPU on them, lots of RAM on them that can slam through these things, and no matter how tricky you are, boom. So why bother then, Tom?
Well, I think that, you know, part of this discussion started with a CNN article, and that was started by the Georgia Tech study, mm-hmm, that they did this brute force password protection or password cracking thing, and they came up with that 8-character password could be cracked in just a few hours based on the new graphics chips that are in the PCs and stuff. And that's why they suggested going to the longer 12-character passwords. Now, I think that's a laboratory case situation, mm-hmm,
right,
because any good system will not allow brute force passwords to be tested against your system. I mean, if you have
if you mess up your password
three times
in a row,
you should be locked out.
You're locked out,
right? Exactly. So that's kind of a to be able to have it cracked within just a few hours is not a real life scenario. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that the problem isn't still there and that it's not something or it's something we shouldn't deal with. We do have to deal with it. We do have to guard our passwords. Mm-hmm. And Gary, you started off at the end asking about what happens with Norton Security Vault or some of the other kind of stuff.
Right.
Can those passwords be hacked into? We don't know this, but if they're doing their job right, that all those passwords should be encrypted, which means that they're in a special code, a relatively unbreakable code, that even if they're hacked into, they're just gobbledygook to whoever hacks into them, and they can't be used.
So I had a friend say, would you trust Norton with your password? Really, would you trust them? And I'm going, wait a minute. Does Norton have better security, or do I think I have better security? Heck yes, I trust them. They're a lot better at this than I am. So, you know, my thought is, and I think a lot of people are starting to figure out that there's so many passwords out there, the proliferation of passwords that you need, because I don't use the same one. I think that's the wrong answer, because if they can, you can crack in one, or if you get somebody who says, I'm going to turn this on so I can see it in the clear, and I'm a disgruntled employee of one company,
right?
And now I have it, username and password, I use the same username. So he'll start saying, well, let's see, if you're here at Macy's, you might be at somebody else, at Target, you might be somewhere else. You may be at one of the 15 big banks, and if that happens and you have username and password, they can get in. So it's the chances of somebody cracking it aren't all that great. But what about disgruntled employees? That's why I change the passwords. And I never, on any of my really important passwords, like my online banking, I don't allow for automatic fills. Because if somebody takes my computer and then can automatically fill the username and password on things. Now, some things I don't care about, like Facebook, it's not so great. But I'll let that, I don't have to remember that one because it's not going to cost me any money, just a little embarrassment if somebody cracks in there. it cost me a lot of money if they crack into my, well, not that much because I don't have that much yeah. in my account, but if I did have more money in the account, it would cost me some money. So I don't do that. I have to, there are some that I just continue to remember. I don't trust anybody but me.
I agree, 100%.
So. Okay, guys, what we're going to do, I'm posting right now, updating a post actually that we have on our Internet Advisor homepage. And it's called Do's and Don'ts of Creating a Strong Password. And what I've done is, if you go into that, if you click on that news item, it's in the advice column. And if you click on that, and the under where it says Do's and Don'ts of Password Creation, it'll take you to the CNN article that Tom brought in today, which is about creating super passwords. And Tom, just to, maybe just quickly before, because we've got a number of people who have got questions here, we want to get to them quickly. But you, before we started this, we were chatting during the break about this. You're talking about graphics cards now having an impact on passwords. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's something that's been coming along for quite a while. And most of us, when we buy PCs, whenever we bought PCs for the last 30 years or so, we're always looking at the main processor, the CPU. You know, is it a Pentium? Is it a Core 2? How many gigahertz? You know, what's the cache in it? But it's a general purpose processor, and for certain applications like creating graphics and generating stuff for passwords, there are other processors that are more appropriate, like graphics processors. And for a few years now, people like NVIDIA and to a lesser extent ATI have been saying, look, we've got this great super duper graphics processor that does all this gaming. It can also be used for X, and that X is these array processing things that you're finding in high performance computing clusters and things like that, as well as things like cracking passwords. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing now, finally, is that general everyday software will start to use the hardware acceleration that you can get through a good graphics processor. All of the new browsers that are being that are coming out, IE9, Firefox 4, mm-hmm. all these things are supposed to have supposed to be able to take advantage of good graphics chips. So when you buy a PC now, or when you're upgrading a PC, it's not just okay to ask about the central processor. Now you got to start asking about the graphics processor mm-hmm. and how good that is, because that will affect your performance.
Yep, a question right. I have for both of you is, and maybe a final one. We're going to take a break, and then we've got a whole bunch of people, and we're ready to answer questions right now anyway with Gary and Tom here. But just finally on this, I've noticed, like, I'm using Chrome now on my Mac a lot. I mm-hmm. love the browser. A lot of browsers nowadays are saying, would you like me to hold your password for you?
Right.
And recognize it. I am saying yes, because I'm presuming a lot of security. Am I wrong to do that?
I say yes on everyone except the ones that really matter.
I agree.
You say yes, you know, yes, let them do that?
Yeah, let them do that. That's what okay. I do.
And
except
never.
For the ones that really matter. And then nobody, all right, I don't let anybody autofill password, username or password on my, you know, on my online banking or anything where it's going to cost me some money.
And never, 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 never on a public computer or even one that's shared with your family members. You really shouldn't do it.
Very, very good points. Yes, we've heard from our listeners before the situations where somebody has come in from the family and use a public computer where a bunch of people are using the computers and a grandson, a nephew, I shouldn't pick on the guys, niece, granddaughter, comes into the house and can follow things up pretty badly because they catch a password.
Yeah,
that's what
they're
doing things that have cost people money, big money.
And Tom brings up a very good point. On the one that I use, and I'm the only one using, I do that. On the one where I do have, and I do let some other family members take and use that computer from time to time, I don't even use it for things that I need a password for.
That's where that phrase "darn kids" came from.
Okay, I want to.
It came from a lot of things.
Quick break, and we got a bunch of people standing by right now. We're going to open up our lines and start our answering questions right now with Gary Baker and Tom Dyra from Foster Brown in studio. You can see a picture of this monster cake if you go to internetadvisor.net. And there's a phrase that says "Happy Birthday, Foster" under news. Just click on that, and you'll see this monstrous cake, which, by the way, is pretty well gone
already.
Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. Our phone number is 1-800-859-0WJR, 1-800-859-0957. Let's jump right in and start answering some questions here with Gary Baker, Tom Dyroff, and Foster Brown. Frank from St. Clair Shores, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Very good. What can we do for you, Frank?
I recently bought a Toshiba E305 laptop, and I have a Dell desktop, Windows XP. The Toshiba is Windows 7.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm getting all these messages for updates.
Okay.
And on the Toshiba laptop, it classifies them as critical updates and optional updates.
Right, right.
And I've heard good and bad things about updates, and I need to know how can I determine if I should do an update or not?
Very good point. Very good point.
Well, I think you know one way, which is if they think it's critical or important, I would do it.
Okay.
So I would do all of those.
The criticals, definitely.
They're either going to fix a bug or they're going to fix a security problem, or there's a reason that they think that that's important, and they will know better than you or me. So I would do all of those. The optional ones. Go ahead.
Okay. On the laptop, it gives me a choice. Critical updates,
right,
or optional updates.
Right.
But on my desktop, which is an older system, Windows XP, it doesn't give me an option. It just lists the update.
Right, exactly. Right. Exactly, yes. Tom, what are your thoughts on that?
There is a risk that any update that you download from any person, any company, is going to cause havoc to your system. There is that risk.
Right.
And however, the... You got to do it. You got to take the risk.
With Microsoft in particular, if that's your operating system,
yeah,
in particular that. Now, you might get Adobe or something like that, or something, another piece of software.
Frankly, even with Adobe, even with Adobe, their Flash, you got to do that too. You're really in a catch-22. If you don't do it, you're opening yourself up to some serious problems that are out there. These zero-day vulnerabilities that seem to pop up more and more often. As a consumer, you got to take the plunge, the leap of faith, and just download and update us automatically.
Now, what I have, I just look to see what I have, and I have no criticals, no importance, but I do have some options. There's a couple that just came in recently. One's from Lenovo. It's going to make my display a little better. Another one is about my track pointer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do both of those. There's an update for Windows 7, which is not a critical but an optional. I'm going to probably do that one. There are a bunch that are all in the language pack.
Yes.
That, you know, I just don't need Arabic or
Bulgarian, the Turkish or instructions,
Chinese, or Croatian, yeah, or Czech or Danish.
Right.
I just don't need those, so I'm not going to do those.
But, you know, one of the things this points out, Frank, is some of the advancements in Windows 7. And because now it is showing you those optional ones and that they are optional. So, for instance, with the language packs, because sometimes 34 of those updates
and that's
might
online.
Be the language pack.
Yeah, 34.
And you don't need those. So Windows 7, folks, that's just another reason for upgrading, I think, in some ways to Windows 7, because it's so much better in so many ways.
Right. Got a choice.
Okay, Frank?
Thanks, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right, let's go to Sally now. Sally is with us from Novi. Sally, welcome to WJR.
Well, thank you. I have a Dell laptop, Inspiron 1520,
mm-hmm,
and my battery light has been flashing red, blinking, for the couple of days.
Okay.
Does that mean my battery's dead?
Have you removed your battery and then put it back?
Uh-huh.
You have?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the things that you can do is, it means there's a problem with your battery. We don't know what the problem is. So one thing that you can do, Tom, and you're the hardware expert. I don't know why I'm answering, asking this. This is, but one of them is to check to see if the contacts are working, right?
Yeah, laptop batteries are a real pain in the rear.
Right.
They're expensive. They always fail after a couple of years, and I just I hate to even deal with them. The odds in this case of a bad battery being the culprit are very high. However, the things you should do are things like cleaning the contacts, reseating it, putting it back in.
Can you hold on a minute? You know, you're breaking up. I'm on my home phone. But you're coming in and out.
Okay,
let's do this. What if you were to hang up and we'll answer it on the air? You can turn your radio back up. There will be a slight delay. There's a little bit of a time delay in case I say something bad. They have a chance to beep it. But and then you can listen on the radio and we can answer this.
You know, and the other thing, Sally, too, is that we post the podcasts of these programs. So you'll be able to listen a little later on tonight or tomorrow. I'll put up the podcast for this program, and then you can listen to the first hour near the end, and you can hear the answer that we've got. So just quickly, guys, again, about the laptop batteries,
Tom?
You were saying, Tom, that you know they go to the pot pretty quickly.
They do. They do. And the good news is that most of the machines will still operate off the AC adapter, even if the battery's bad.
Right.
So you still have to leave it in there. Now, since every laptop's a little bit different in terms of its functionality and operation, in this case, like in other cases, if I've got a problem, I would go to Google or Bing, and I would put in Dell Inspiron 1500 blinking red light and see what it says in order to get a better feeling.
Excellent.
If other people have a problem or if it really is just a dead battery.
I guarantee other people will have this problem.
Good point.
But in just looking at the quick notes here, it looks like it's a bad battery. And then Inspiron 1500 has been around for a few years.
Yeah,
so that you know, the bad battery, that age, that all kind of ties together.
Yeah, just a quick question, guys. Is it true? I was told this with my Apple when I took it in, that I was getting only 80% efficiency on my battery. I don't use my battery. I seldom use my laptop unplugged. I have plugged in most of the time. Is it true that you should run your battery down?
It depends on the type of battery that's in there. The NiCads versus the lithiums versus et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all have different characteristics. And again, I'd have to do some research on each individual one in order to answer that.
But the old wisdom wasn't it that you should run your battery down to zero?
The older ones, but you should know, the new ones, you don't want to run down to zero. In fact, that's a bad thing. You want to run it down close, but not completely out.
Okay, that was just a question I wanted to throw in. Hey, we got a whole bunch of people on the line waiting to ask questions. We'll be back to take those questions in just a moment as the Internet Advisor continues. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Another hour of our program continues with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Tom Dyroff here on WJR, the great voice of the Great Lakes, and this weekend full of experts. We'll be back in just a little bit after the news with Gene Fogle at the top of the hour to answer more of your questions on Hour 2 of the Internet Advisor. Thank you for listening to this first hour of the Internet Advisor, recorded on August 21st, 2010 on WJR, 760 AM, the home of the Internet Advisor for the last 12 years. If you'd like to find out more about the program or look into some more of our content, please visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. Now, if you'd like to listen to the second hour of the program, please click on that hour on this page.